Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we're going to talk a little about biological products, or as we often call them, natural products. We would also be happy to take your phone call and talk about anything going on your farm or answer any of your questions. Our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. We'll get to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. And you can find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, so just to begin with, on this whole biological products thing, and then, like I say, we'll get into the Ag PhD mailbag right away, I would just say this. As a nation in the United States, and I believe it's mostly the same in Canada, people aren't super excited when companies come out with new pesticides, because just the word pesticide scares a lot of people, like, really bad. Same thing with biotech traits, which, by the way, biotechnology is part of at least one of the COVID vaccines that are being worked on right now. So we'll see people's impressions about biotech after a COVID vaccine gets approved that may have biotech. Anyway, the point here is with these biological products, it is a way to take things that are natural, things that already exist in the environment, and just bringing them from one place to another to hopefully help crop yields. So there are a lot of things, we'll call them biostimulants. There are biopesticides. There are a number of different types of biological products. But I would say, too, most farmers, when I talk to most farmers, they feel skeptical about biologicals, thinking, oh, it's snake oil. And I know, like for Darren and me, that's how our dad felt about a lot of these products too. But think about inoculant for soybeans or almost any legume. Okay, you probably recognize that all inoculant is live bacteria, so it is a biological product that helps that legume crop produce more of its own nitrogen. Well, that's a biological. That's been out there for many years. That's proven. Okay, so, I mean, that's just one example of something that I think most farmers feel like, oh, yeah, I mean, that's something worth investing in, and it only costs a dollar or two, so it's no big deal. Darren and I have been doing a lot of work on biologicals for probably 15 years now, and I would just tell you this. If you want to try some biological things, number one, don't, in year one, do it on the whole farm. Do some trial work somehow, some way, even if it's coming from somebody that you super trust. nevertheless, I just don't see the need in putting it on all your acres year one. But when you are going to run trials, here's what we did on our farm to prove, okay, so Quickritz was the very first biological product that was outside the realm of inoculants. The very first biological product that we did a lot of testing with. And here's what we did. We did, obviously, field observations. So we went out there, did side-by-side work. But then we did root digs. We did plant tissue analysis to determine how many nutrients were in the plants. And by the way, that was one of the key factors for us in seeing week after week, there were more nutrients in the Quickroots treated plants. With the root digs, seeing more roots, with the nutrient levels, seeing more nutrients in the plants all the way through the season, well, by the time it reached harvest, and yes, we had yield increase, but then that helped explain the yield increase, and it helped give you some backup data so we felt more confident in it. And then it actually took us 3 years of testing with that, and I know the third year of testing, we did roughly 10 different varieties on our farm over about 1,000 acres, about 100 acres each of 10 different varieties, split the planter in every single field. And we had an 8-bushel gain. And I'm not suggesting that you do 3 years of testing on your farm and take 1,000 acres to do trial work on some biological product. For us, this was a big deal, and we were talking a lot about it. You know, we farmed quite a few acres, whatever. It was not that big a deal for us. But I'm just saying, for you, at least do some trials. That would be my advice to you. Whether you realize it or not, you have probably used some biological products in the past. There are some that get included as inert ingredients. There are certainly some plant growth hormones, some beneficial microbes. bacteria, fungi. There are a lot of different things out there. So we'll talk about that throughout the show today. But right now, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren. All right, our first question comes from Ontario, and this is from Willie. He says, my levels of phosphate right now are at 80 parts per million. I'm wondering, is there any benefit to putting another 75 pounds of phosphorus out at side dress or at planting time?
No. Side dress, no, most likely. Anyway, it depends on how you're going to do it. You got to get it in the ground. If you're going to lay in the soil surface, that's bad. At planting time, it could actually help. And part of the reason why it could help is phosphorus isn't super available when the weather is really cold. So like for us, I like planting when the soil temp is 50 degrees, maybe 45 degrees, maybe even 40. Okay, well, I can tell you at all three of those temperatures, phosphorus for the most part is not very available. So if you have at least a little bit to get the plant started, that's good. The next thing is, what did you say he had? 80 parts per million?
Yes, 80 parts per million, which if you figure in a 6-inch soil test, multiply that times 2, that's 160 pounds of P. Times 2.3 would be 368 pounds of phosphate. And I just did a little calculation because it takes roughly a half a pound of total phosphorus uptake or total phosphate uptake per bushel of corn. So that would be enough for about 730 bushel corn. And that would be enough for 370 bushel beans. Now, at first glance, it sounds like, wow, I'm great for a long, long time. I wouldn't necessarily say that because I don't think there's any way you're going to get 100% of that pulled in by your plant.
No, they usually say the best you can do is 20%. Okay, so here, let's run that math again. What did we say? Okay. 368? What's 368 times 20%? It's about what the corn is actually going to pull out for grain. So 250 bushel corn, for example, takes 128 pounds of phosphate, 128. So that's over a third of what you've got in the soil already. Now, granted, there will still be some left in the stover, but still, I'd at least be trying to maintain that level if it was me. So if you can, I would put out what crop removal is. That's what we will typically do when our levels start getting up to around 80. All right, well, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Ag PhD Radio.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Got resistant weeds? Add Tough 5EC as your post-emergence tank mix partner to deliver the knockout punch to Palmer amaranth and water hemp. Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of key broadleaf weeds, especially resistant strains. Tough 5EC is manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, an agrochemical company focused on providing innovative products with strong technical support. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltrumUSA.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about biological or natural type products. There are many being used in agriculture right now for a variety of purposes. And if you are interested in this, if you say, boy, that'd be nice to get away from some of the chemical things that we've been doing over the years, Well, that's definitely one of the things that we're going to get into. We're also just looking at what is this and what's the science behind it. So we're real happy to start our show off with Scott Eukness today with AgBiome. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You know, I think for my dad, I remember growing up in the 80s. Now, granted, in the 80s, we just didn't have much money at all. We were just happy to be surviving on the farm in the 80s. But Dad would always look at things and he'd say, oh, boy, I don't know if I want to try something like that. I'd rather just spend a little more money on N, P, or K and take my chances there. And that's fine, I guess, in some aspects, but maybe not the greatest environmental choice. When we look at some of the new things coming out in terms of biological or natural products, working with naturally occurring microbes and these types of things, it's really exciting. And one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about today is just the science that goes into this. Can you talk just a little bit about your company and how you're going about addressing this segment of the market?
Yeah, it's very exciting times, and I do remember the 80s also. I worked on a farm, and it was hard work, not a lot of money. The thing that AgBiome did is we started in 2013, and we felt that there was a real gap in what had been done with biologicals. You know, there's a lot of biostimulants and things like this out there, but there really aren't very many biologicals that have profoundly good activity to control diseases or insects or nematodes or weeds. And we thought that was an opportunity. So we initially started a program where we identified about 90,000 unique strains that AgBiome owns. And we did something different that nobody else had done. We sequenced every gene in every strain. So we knew what was in there. And if you know a little bit about microbial ecology, they're not like macroscopic organisms. So you can have two microbes that are exact same species, but they can differ by 50% of their genes, which, you know, I think we're 99% similar to a chimpanzee or something. So this is a profoundly different type of environment in the microbial world. And if you don't know what those genes are that are programming the biochemistry of the strain, you can't really tell if it's different or not. And so we combined that with a unique screening protocol where we actually use the diseases and the pests and the insects and the weeds that are problems for farmers, not some surrogate, no Drosophila, no white mice or anything like that, but the actual things that are problems. And we're able to find biologicals that have profoundly good efficacy. As a matter of fact, our lead product, which is just on the market now, called Howler, the biological fungicide, and in many crops and diseases, it actually has activity that is equal to or surpasses that of synthetic chemistry, which is really amazing. And we even kind of surprised ourselves on some of this. Now, that said, that's not always the case for every single crop, every single disease, but the where we market it, it works really well.
Yeah, and that's going to be the thing, just dialing in specific markets and specific problems. That's what's exciting to me, Scott, is just looking at people like yourself that have some knowledge in this business, that have been around for a while and have seen, all right, what are the true opportunities here and what are we missing? And I think this is certainly one of those things when we can bring natural things that happen out in the environment and just put them in the right spots. Like, for example, take pigweed. There's got to be a microbe, a disease, something out there that doesn't like pigweed. And when we find that, it's just going to be earth shattering for the whole market.
Yeah, no, really good point. So two things. One is I picked up on the been around for a long time thing. I just turned 60 last week, so I'm a little sensitive about
not picking on you, Scott, not picking on you, but you did talk about the 80s.
I did. Yeah, so pigweed. You know, one of the things we have in our screening protocol is we have pigweed that's resistant to Roundup, and we use that to screen for microbes. And indeed, we have some microbes and some extracts of microbes that work really well to kill pigweed. That's still early in development. We're probably on the order of 4 years from being able to introduce that to the market, but that's in our pipeline.
You know, and it sounds far-fetched maybe to some folks, but honestly, if you walk fields enough and you look at all the weed problems that are out there, you do notice that, hey, there are some diseases that impact certain weeds, and there are certain microbes and even insects that will impact certain diseases. And when we can find those things in nature that can do the job for us, that'll work 24/7, maybe even 365 out in the field, that's fantastic. And there are a lot of problems out there, Scott, that we just haven't been able to address with synthetic chemistries. And you look at white mold in soybeans and sunflowers and dry beans. I mean, there's some chemistries that do okay, but there's nothing that's 100%. And when we have a natural solution, that's a good alternative.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. I would say that when we're screening for things to control weeds, the kind of common sense thing would be to think that, okay, you're going to get pathogens. But we kind of counter-select against that because we typically will make an extract from the strain and then apply that to the weed. So we're actually looking for natural product chemicals that these strains make that work as herbicides. And you probably know about Balafos, and there's several other of these compounds that are out there that are actually derived from natural products. They're very similar. So it's actually a good place to look, and there's synthetic chemistry that was designed effectively using these natural product leads. So we're just going to try to get that original natural product.
Okay, you mentioned your product Howler that's on the market today. Talk to us a little bit about where do you like that? What crops, what geographies, where are some of the places where farmers could look right now to find some of the trial data and just see what you're talking about?
Yeah, we've got some data on our website, which is agbiome.com. That's agbiome.com. But this is a kind of thing where you're going to want to talk with your retailer and the distributor. And where we have really good activity is on a lot of the specialty crops. So things like strawberry and botrytis, we have profoundly good activity in those kind of market segments. So it also works against damping off diseases, which are for major row crops, corn and soybeans, either applied as a seed treatment or in a furrow application. But now, I've listened to you guys over the years, and I can't tell you how kind of proud I am to be on your radio show. But I also think that sometimes in certain markets, fungicides in row crops may or may not be what the grower really wants. In other cases, it is actually what they really need to do. A few years ago, we had that really cold, wet spring, and Howler outperformed synthetic chemicals, and there was a big damping off problem in soybeans and in corn. And, normally you probably don't see that every year, year in, year out, especially in your area where it's pretty dry. But in areas where they get too much rain, especially if it's cold, you put that soybean seed in the ground, and it gets cold, it doesn't really germinate, there's no vigor. And if you have a chemical seed treatment, that chemical can actually leach away from the seed. Whereas one of the benefits of Howler is it can actually grow as an endophyte. That means it can grow inside the actual plant and colonize it and cause the protection to last significantly longer than you can get with a chemical.
Now, there's a term that we're going to probably discuss a little bit today, endophytes. It's something we're hearing a lot more of. I know traveling in the last couple of years down to New Zealand, there's definitely a lot of talk about endophytes in various crops there as well, trying to help our plants. And that's what this is all about. We're talking with Scott Euknes with Ag Biome. And Scott had mentioned you can find more information about some of their trials, some of the things that they're doing. It's really interesting just hearing about sequencing every gene in every strain that they're working on. You can find more data at agbiome.com. Scott, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you so much. And like I said, this is a proud moment for me. I've watched you guys for decades.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Now, see, now you're trying to make us feel old too, Scott. Way to go. Way to go. Well, that's what we get for talking about the 80s on our show today too. All right, we're talking about biological products on our show today. And of course, if you have an agronomic question for us, doesn't have to be on this topic, can be on anything happening on your farm, just give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. We'll be right back after this.
Music. When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Credit Extreme, the herbicide with dual salt technology that makes all the difference. Faster uptake, quicker rain fastness, and better control in variable weather, something we've all had our fair share of. When you need more powerful weed control for challenges like lamb's quarters and velvet leaf, with excellent safety to Roundup Ready crops, you need Credit Extreme. Nufarm and Credit Extreme, here to help.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're talking about biological products, and Brian and I will mention these from time to time on the show. Of, you know, we get accused of being, oh, you guys just love Roundup and you love all these herbicides to kill weeds. No, that's just our best option that we've got that we can use once we've already got a problem. If we can avoid that, of course we will, with crop canopy, with cultural things. And there's a lot of different ways to handle challenges on the farm. And one of the options now that we've got in many ways for protection of our plants and just to help our plants with more of the natural beneficial microbes that are in the soil is to apply some of these biological products at different times. We've got Trevor Israel with us right now with Valent to talk about a couple of these things. Trevor, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Darren. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I got a lot of different things I could talk to you about, but one that I was thinking about when Scott Euchness was on with Ag Biome and he was talking about protecting our plants, and that made me think about Aveo and some of the things that you're doing there to try to keep nematodes and other problems away. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. Aveo EZ is a biological nematicide. It's the active ingredient is Bacillus amyloliquefaciens, a certain strain of BA, and actually what it does, it will colonize the soybean roots, and we've seen that it has a positive effect on the soybean plant, and actually will deter the feeding of the soybean cyst nematode in particular, but a whole range of other nematodes and soybeans as well as corn and some other crops as well.
Yeah, I think about it like this. If you've got that big, mean guard dog hanging out right outside your place, a lot of bad things just stay away from your place. And it's kind of that same thing. We think about Bacillus, in this case, Bacillus amylicofaciens, that it's just one of those tough bugs that a lot of the different microbes and so a lot of the bad guys, they don't want to mess with that, and they just stay away. That's a good way to do it. And I know there's other products out there that will try to kill nematodes and these kinds of things. And either way, we want to protect our roots. And like you say, Aveo's got a positive impact in soybeans. How about something like Endoprime? I know we've talked about mycorrhizal fungi a little bit on the show, but talk to us a little bit about where that can be a positive factor for plant growth too.
Okay, so for Endoprime, the MycoApply Endoprime, that's a FDSC is a liquid formulation, and that can be applied in furrow to corn along with the corn seed. Can mix it with starter fertilizer or other products going in furrow as well, and that will essentially also colonize the plant, the corn plant, as well as other crops, and grow with the plant. And what it does, it just helps out the corn plant, and in return, the fungus, the four species of mycorrhizal fungi, will receive sugars and a place to grow and help the plant out in times of stress, whether it be needing extra moisture or better access to nutrients like phosphorus, and actually making the plant actually make it through tough times, stressful times, better throughout the course of the year. Endoprime SC for corn, as well as granular product, just MycoApply Endo, can be mixed with alfalfa as well. If anyone is seeding alfalfa this fall or in the spring, that's another crop that is is a poster child for the benefits of mycorrhizal fungi. So people thinking about that this fall as well. Basically, just colonize the plant, growing along with the plant. As long as the plant is growing, being able to combat certain times of stress, and that's the benefit of the four different species of the mycorrhizal fungi. One can come on when flourish in a certain time period over the course of the season, you know, early versus late season. Really have just a really good team there. Think of all the individual players on what makes a great team. Well, you come on when you're needed. So the four species combination is very powerful in that respect.
I think the other thing too is just to have multiple species in there, because as we were talking about earlier, even within that same family, you could have a significant difference in the DNA of each one of those strains, so they can really tolerate different situations. Especially, we've got so many growers that have been talking to us about MycoApply Endoprime just over the Prevent Plant Acres the last couple of years. It's been a really big thing to get things going again. Trevor, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Darren. Take care.
Let's head out to North Carolina. Got Kevin Matthews with us right now. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Doing fine, sir. Hope you all are.
Yeah, we're doing fine up here too. Just about ready to start harvest. And I'm kind of excited too, because we get to evaluate all these trials that we've got. Our topic today is biological products. And certainly we got a number of different strains out there on the farm this year that we're kind of looking to see what works out the best for us. Is this whole biological product thing something as a farmer that appeals to you versus using hard chemistries, or just really struggling with some problems like pigweed and other things that I know you face in North Carolina?
Yeah, well, we do have our weed issues, which is, you know, good, timely, quick applications is helps eliminate those being a threat. With all our rainfall this year, it's certainly been a challenge to keep some clean fields. I've got some mare's tail in mine and a few pigweed here and there that normally we don't have, but, you know, we've reduced it where it's not a yield limiting factor, but it's still ugly. We don't like having it. But with the biologicals, it's, gosh, that's a big world right there. It's, we're really excited about it. This year, for the first time, we kind of went full swing across the farm. You know, taking out some of the amounts of fertilizers we had been purchasing and increasing the amounts of biologicals. And to be quite honest, we've had a good growing season, but pretty impressed with what we're seeing, and very impressed with the bottom line on the lowering the input cost of this crop. And, you know, in our tissue samples, we've not been deficient. So we've been able to get that microbial activity very active in the soil and take advantage of, you know, of the nutrients that God's give us in the soil.
You know, you mentioned having a good growing season. That's always a great thing as a farmer, but I just look at how many nutrients it takes to grow that good crop and really take advantage of having that good season. And you mentioned putting on these biologicals, just getting them to work on our organic matter in our soil and different things on those soil colloids that make it tough for our roots to get the nutrients. If we have a good soil health and lots of microbes in the soil making those nutrients available, it's just a win-win deal for us as farmers.
It is, and you know, we've been doing trial work for, gosh, I don't know, many years. First time we kind of felt like it was, you just don't know. You wonder if it's snake oil, if it's really worth looking into. But we started seeing some things, and the industry's gotten so much better. The guy Valent used to speaking with and so many others has learned so much more about how to manage these biologicals and what they can work with and work for, and it sometimes even replace. It's really been it's been very exciting. I think there's a lot to learn on it, so much to learn.
When does harvest start in your area on corn and soybeans, Kevin?
We started picking, we're running late. We started harvesting corn a week ago today on Labor Day. Normally we're already, you know, 10% into the harvest by that time. The eastern part of the state, they've been running probably since the middle of September. They've been running. Take it back. They started probably 3 to 4 weeks ago.
Okay.
A lot of them planting earlier varieties, trying to, you know, we just try to beat the hurricanes and the floods.
Yeah, that gets to be a challenge. I know you mentioned the tough weather some years and keeping soil health going when you have a drought 1 year and a flood the next is a real challenge. I've actually had a chance to be on, for our listeners, I've had a chance to be on Kevin's farm, and it's not easy. It's not easy where you farm, Kevin. You definitely have your challenges out there, but thanks for joining us today. Thanks for talking a little about what's going on, and stay safe this harvest season.
Yes, and I hope you all stay safe, and all our listeners out there, just be careful. Y'all have a good one. Thank you, sir.
You bet. Thank you, Kevin. Talking about biological products on our show today, and also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. We're going to dive back into that AG-PHD mailbag right after this.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Each year brings new and unique challenges to farming, and your operation needs to constantly adapt to meet them. That's why at AgBiome, we're working every day to bring you new and better solutions. Microbial-based solutions that protect your crop and help it reach its full potential. To learn more about how we're doing it, visit agbiome.com. That's AGBIOME.com. AgBiome, feeding the world responsibly. Partnering with microbes for human benefit.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Vazgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Vazgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetual, and its burn down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans like literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD if you would like to call us and join our discussion on biological products, or if you've got an agronomic question. I got a few agronomic questions, Brian, that got sent to us. I want to get into Chris's here. He said, I've been reading on the Valor label, and I plan on doing some fall applications, and they are saying for fall applications, just leave it on top, which is what you guys had told me a few weeks ago when I'd asked you the question. But now I get another question. I'm going to have to cultivate my field in the spring before planting. I'm wondering, will that hurt me? Will that hurt my Valor performance? And I
need to, if you do it shallow.
Okay. I need to do this fall application because I just don't have a lot of extra manpower, and I don't have time for that spring application. But the main weeds I'm trying to kill right now, well, the main weed is volunteer canola. We do raise canola, but are not a fan as to how it keeps coming back every year, even though we're on a four-year rotation. Long story short, spring applied Valor is probably my best option, but since I only have time for fall, will it still work well with the cultivator in the spring?
Yes. Yep, that'll be fine. Just make sure you use a good strong rate and everything will be okay. I'll leave it at that. There are lots of options to control volunteer canola. You know, it all depends on what crop you're going to, obviously, but we usually talk to people about starting with either Authority or Valor plus Metribuzin, and then early post going with Pursuit or Flexstar or a combination of the two. So those are, I'd say, the most popular products for volunteer canola control in soybeans.
Right, thanks for the question. Really appreciate that, Chris. I got one from MH who said, just want to thank you guys for answering my question last week. I really enjoy listening to your show because of your wealth of knowledge and professional opinions. Great job. Hey, thanks. Really appreciate that. We enjoy answering questions, and it does challenge us because we've always got to keep up on what's going on. This question comes from Austin down in Nebraska. He said, I represent an aerial application company in our area. Not a lot of guys are spraying fungicide on wheat, but we've seen good results. Want to learn a little bit more about that. Where's the best place to get more information and knowledge about fungicides for wheat and aerial application?
Well, specific to aerial application, I don't know exactly, but in terms of fungicide on wheat, there's all kinds of information out there. So there are plenty of universities that run trials on wheat. You can talk to any of the universities. You can talk to any of the companies that sell fungicides. They'll hook you up with whoever's been running trials on stuff as well. But I mean, as you're reading that question, Darren, and he said, not many people spray fungicide on wheat. I'm going, what? It doesn't even make logical sense to me because wheat is, let's put it this way.
Normally when you hear that, it's in lower yielding environments. So we're used to getting 30 and 40 bushel. Does that mean that's all the potential there is? Absolutely not. You definitely could have a lot higher yielding wheat, even in those areas.
Where's he from?
I'm not sure exactly where in Nebraska, but just
yeah, okay. So we don't know which part, but anyway, the whole point is, wheat has every possible disadvantage when it comes to tolerating disease. It is the breeding is not done by, well, let's just put it this way. There are way fewer dollars stuck into wheat breeding as opposed to corn and soybean breeding. Okay, so it's not getting the advancements as fast as corn and soybeans. On top of that, you look at the dense population that you plant, and then it's out there early in the spring when it's cool, it's wet, the plants are damp all the time, and I mean, it's just ripe for disease. So on top of that, we got some really terrible diseases that can impact wheat. I mean, the stripe rust thing that's gotten worse and worse here over the last half a dozen years or so, that's a really big one. There's that fusarium head blight, or head scab, we often call it. That's horrible. The other side is fungicide prices have been coming down. So I know the wheat price isn't what any crop farmer would like right now, but still, it's not horrible, and the ROI is usually pretty good on the fungicide. So that's a little bit surprising to me, but yeah, there's plenty of information out there, plenty of data to show yield gain, and I'm encouraged as we move forward. We keep getting better fungicides, prices keep coming down, so hopefully it gets better and more people are spraying to get that yield gain and get that ROI.
Thanks for the question. Got this from Ed in Indiana. He said, I'm considering strip cropping, alternating corn and soybeans. I've heard you talk about your previous experience in this, trying strips or six-row strips.
Yep.
Wondering, which crop did you harvest first? Did you time out the maturities to come in the same, or did you harvest the beans first?
Yes.
Okay. I'm considering running 40-foot strips. My current equipment, I've got a 40-foot bean head, 40-foot corn, 30-foot corn head, and a 90-foot sprayer.
Well, I would like to know, and he didn't put that in the question unless there was some you didn't read, about why would you do it? Because it makes it challenging for fertilization, for spraying, for harvest, for everything. It makes it challenging. So, I mean, to me, the two reasons why I'm willing to do things on the farm, well, three maybe. I'd say ease has something to do with it. But I'm looking at either profit, which a lot of times, let's face it, comes down to yield, and good for the soil. So if you think it's good for the soil, okay, I don't know that it would be. But I struggle to wonder why people want to go this direction other than yield. And there are some people who've had success with yield, but this is what we talk about all the time and the experience we had. Okay, so this may work for you way better than it worked for us. But yeah, we went six rows and six rows. That's what we were told was supposed to be really good. And what we found is it was unbelievably easy to raise 300 bushel corn then. So we normally get 225 on corn. But I mean, 300 was no problem at all because of the shading effect. You don't have the shading. The problem was, yeah, we got 300 bushel corn, but our beans took a hit. We normally get 70, 75 bushel beans, and we were getting 50. Well, I looked at the numbers because right away, you know, I'm going, wow, this was great on the corn. And, oh, yeah, that's right. We already harvested the beans, and they were terrible. I know 50 bushel beans isn't terrible, but the point is when it's 20 bushels less than you're used to raising, okay, well, that's a big-time loss in terms of profit. And so, yeah, we gained 60 or 80 on the corn, but we lost 20 on the beans, and so it was a wash. And for more hassle and effort, and then we had to obviously get a small head. I mean, you can plant it all at the same time if you want to. That's no big deal. But now some of the best chemistries are out for the corn and for the beans. And so to me, it just wasn't worth it. But there certainly are some people who swear by it. They really like it. It's worked for them. What I've seen, though, is it's been people who've struggled to raise good beans, okay? If you've struggled to raise good beans and you've tried everything, you've gotten your K levels way up, you fixed the drainage, you've done everything you can, and your bean yields are just, they're just not there, then, yeah, by all means, I'm interested in this because I know you will gain a whole bunch of yield on the corn. So anyway, and if you just like raising 300 bushel corn, maybe 400 even, it'll be fun. So I will tell you this. One of the things we were learning, now, if you're doing 40-foot strips, that's really wide. So you're not going to gain nearly as much. But anyway, when we're doing strips like the 6 and 6, one of the things we learned and we're told from people who've been doing this for a long time, raise shorter hybrids on the edges and taller ones in the middle. So that seems to help as well. You could also go a thicker population on the edges and thinner in the middle. So just a few things for you to think about there.
All right, got a question. This one's from Rick, and he said, I've got a weed control issue, and it's out in my pasture. I haven't ever seen this one before. I think it might be Russian thistle. To me, it looks like pigweed. It just, there's a lot of different kinds of pigweed out there. This looks like it's a variant of pigweed. He said, anyway, just curious how you try and control that out in pasture.
Oh, by the way, the picture's kind of blurry. And so one of the things, I often send pictures from my phone as well, and it'll give you the option, right, when you send that picture, what size to send it in. Send it in the biggest size because then it's got the most detail, got the most pixels. So, yeah, it's kind of blurry, but, yeah, it certainly looks like pigweed.
He said, I was thinking about using Grazon Next in my pasture. What do you think about that?
That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. There are a lot of things that will work out there. To me, Distinct would be the best. But, you know, anything containing 2,4-D or dicamba will be fine. Tordon is okay.
If you have perennials or biennials out there, then Grazon Next is a pretty good choice.
Yeah.
I think if you just had these annual weeds out there, I'd just save some money and
go
with Distinct.
Yes.
Thanks for the question, Rick. We really appreciate that. We'll get back to more of your questions right after this.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipcam Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic insecticides from Atticus LLC. Unwanted insects are a nuisance, but they're no match for Serpent from Atticus. Serpent delivers economical, fast-acting, broad-spectrum control to help your corn, soybeans, and wheat crops thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shutter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetual, and its burn-down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag, taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844 844-AG-PHD or radio at agphd.com. Get this one from Austin in Illinois. He said, I'm a crop consultant in Western Illinois. I was studying Mulder's chart, trying to gain a better knowledge on nutrient antagonism versus stimulation. Could you give me some insight on nutrient ratios between some of these nutrients? Our soils here are 16 to 20 cation exchange capacity, really high calcium, often 5,000 to 6,000 pounds per acre, high magnesium, 500 to 700 pounds per acre, and organic matter in the low to mid threes. Now, our soil lab that our company uses doesn't test for molybdenum, unfortunately, and it leaves me curious to what those levels would be as well.
Okay, so what are some ratios that we commonly use? One that we talk about quite often is phosphorus to zinc, and it's usually 8 to 1, 10 to 1, somewhere in that kind of range. But here's the whole thing. There is nobody out there that can tell you exactly what it should be in your soil for all these different nutrients, because there are a whole bunch of essential nutrients for plants, and there's just, you would think that in this day and age, we'd have stuff that's a lot more refined, but since every soil is a little different, and today our topic was biological products, well, I want you to think about just microbes in general. There are so many microbes in the soil that they impact nutrient availability. And that absolutely has something to do with what's the right ratio I need in my soil versus what you need in your soil, because we have different microbial life there. So what we've been doing here the last few years on our farm is we've been doing a lot of 1-acre grids, and I'm not saying everybody has to go to 1-acre grids. You can do 5 acres with this or 2.5, whatever you want to do. But the point is, when you've got a GPS point where you've pulled samples, and we've got a whole bunch of them, I mean thousands on our farm per year, then I can compare all those to yield. So basically, we have one person spend a day each fall after harvest and painstakingly go through, and we've overlaid the yield map on top of the soil test map. You see where the grid points are for the soil test, and then you just hover the mouse over the screen. Hopefully we get a better system for this someday. But I mean, it's not even one day that it takes one person to do, so it's a tiny investment. But anyway, we've got all on a spreadsheet all the soil test data, and all they do is hover the mouse over in each one of these GPS points and see, okay, what's closest yield data point? What was our yield right at that point? And mark it down and put that down on the spreadsheet. Well, when you've got thousands, we have a good data set, and we've done this for a couple of years now. Well, that's awesome. So it really helps us understand, okay, what's paying more for us? More copper, more yield. Okay, or is it less copper means more yield? Well, that tells you real fast where to put your money, right? And then we do it for the ratios too, because that was one of the things I brought up copper specifically, because we did have where one year, let's see, it was in 2018, more copper paid. So we put more copper on. In 2019, more copper did not pay. In fact, it was the lower copper levels that paid. And we're like, no way, this can't possibly be right, because we got all this data from the year before. It didn't lie. Well, what it really came down to was the copper phosphorus ratio. And we had screwed up and not put enough phosphorus on for 2019. And so where we had good phosphorus levels, more copper still did pay. Okay, so you can see where I'm going with all this, and now I don't have to trust any other fertilizer expert. I don't have to look at, soil tests from around the world. I don't have to look at somebody's yield data from the next state or even the next county. I have my own, and this is what I've been saying for 2 years now to every farmer out there. You have your own data. Just put the yield together with the soil test data and you've got it. And now all of a sudden you can start deciding where your dollars get spent on fertilizer for your farm. You're going to be so much smarter when you do this because you have all the data. So anyway, now granted, if you take 10 soil tests on your farm, you're not going to have enough data to make decisions. And that's where I have said, hey, even for just 1 year, take some 1-acre grids or 2.5 or whatever, or do it, at least in a few fields, whatever. The point is, you've got to get at least some data to put that together with all your yield data, because you've got probably millions of yield data points each year, and you just need some soil test data points, And now you compare the two, and then you can see where should your money go with fertility.
All right, thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got this one from Daniel. He said, I've got a general theory question about P and K movement in the soil. I hear you guys talk a lot about P and K and non-leachable microbes not moving very much in the soil.
Right.
So if I'm calculating crop removal rates and then discounting for the residue that we're leaving, wouldn't this move all the non-leachable nutrients to the surface and above the ideal area for uptake?
No.
Now, we certainly see K move up, and we talk about where things are going to be stratified in the soil. And absolutely. K comes up because it's going to break down. It's going to flush out of the residue above ground. Like with your corn stalks, a lot of times that first good rain that you have flushes K right out of that.
Some.
So we do see a K buildup. Even when we did those tests, Brian, every 1 inch going down through conventional till, no-till, and strip-till ground, we did see K move up. We didn't see phosphorus move up like that.
I don't recall that. And I'm literally looking at it right here. So I don't really see that exactly what you're talking about. The whole thing is, first of all, when we talk about this moving it up, keep in mind, half of your silver is below ground. Half of your silver is below ground. So when those roots break down, they're already down below ground. But yes, you know, with potassium, that's the one there, that there'd be a fair amount in that residue. But when you compare it to how many hundreds and hundreds of pounds are already in the soil, it's a smaller percentage. Okay, now with phosphorus, a lot of times we don't have hundreds of pounds in the soil. We might have 100 pounds in the soil, maybe 200, but more likely 100. So you got to think about that a little bit too. And there's certainly not as much phosphorus left in the residue. So it all depends on which nutrient you're talking about exactly. But yes, I mean, there's some that's going to be in the soil surface, but I think we're just very, very heavily discounting the fact that this massive root system below the ground has nutrients, and it breaks down and it releases those nutrients down into the soil.
All right, let's get back into today's topic just a little bit and get this one from JJ, and he talked about building organic matter, and he said, you also need all these natural microbes out there, biology, fungi in the soil to aerate and help build soil health.
Yep.
Just because a lot of folks will talk about organic matter, meaning a healthy soil if you get a lot of organic matter, but you also need all that biology as
well. Yeah, well, it kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, if you're building organic matter, typically, you're finding you've got more beneficial microbes, and the beneficial microbes like the higher organic matter level. So, yeah, I agree with him. It's just they kind of go hand in hand to some degree.
Felix sent in a comment, just laughing at us a little bit. He said, drain tiles on every single show, guys. Yep, pretty much, Felix, because when we think about soil health and a lot of things we're trying to do out in the field, we have to have oxygen in the soil. Or like today's program, we're talking about the microbiology and everything that's living in that soil. If we don't have air there, they don't live, and our crops don't do well.
We have a few basic premises here. Number one, we want to make sure drainage is good. That should always be number one and the first thing we spend money on. Number two is fertility. Number three could be anything else, quite frankly. So it's weed control, insect control, disease control, seed selection, you know, seed placement, timing, residue management. I mean, there are so many things to take a look at. But yeah, I mean, it really starts with good drainage and then good fertility. And then to me, it's everything else. Not that everything else is unimportant, but I'm just saying those first two things are where the first dollar should usually go. If you get those two things right, a lot of times some of the other things start to fall into place.
Thanks for the feedback. We appreciate that. Thanks for checking out our show.
Hey, by the way, poor drainage kills the biologicals. So if you have to have air there, and that's one of the main reasons we talk about drainage so much. Go ahead.
All right, I'll give you a real easy one to wrap our show up, Brian. This is from Dave in North Dakota. He said, I'm in central North Dakota, and I've got a pasture that has got some leafy spurge out there. What would be the best chemical I could use to wipe it out for good?
Tordon. Tordon has tremendous residual. Just make sure you're not using it near water because Tordon kills fish, and don't use it near trees that you'd like to keep because Tordon can kill trees as well. Now, if you have those things, what would I use instead? I might use 2,4-D. I prefer Distinct, but you know, you could go 2,4-D or Distinct, but you're going to have to do it multiple times per year for multiple years to get even close to the level of control you'll see with Tordon in one application. Just make sure you use a good rate of Tordon. The best rate's a quart, but you know, even a pint's not terrible.
Thanks for the question, Dave, and thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.